Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is Hashtag No Limits. I'm your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people whose society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true. And I believe that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. As if that's not difficult enough, it then has to struggle to get out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. And while none of that can be easy, neither is busting through those limits that society places upon you. And today, I'm very excited to introduce and have on my show Nicole Bustamante. She and I just recently officially met. But we've known each other, I guess, about a year and a half or so.
Yeah, around there.
We met last year at the conference, right?
Oh yeah, we met last year too. Yeah, so almost 2 years. Yeah, but like a year and a half.
Yeah. So the reason that we know each other is because we are both master IEP coaches, and we just recently had our VIP weekend, which for those of you who follow me, you've seen some social media posts, and probably anybody who follows Nicole has seen them as well. So welcome, Nicole. How are you? How was getting back after the trip and getting in?
Thank you. Yeah, I'm good. You know, with it being summer, it was kind of good to get back into a routine. It wasn't too crazy, you know. But yeah, it was, the VIP weekend was really, really good. It was nice to meet so many new people and everybody from last year.
Yeah, it is such an amazing group of people. And when I don't know if this happened to you, but the first conference that I went to, it was much smaller, but just every single person I felt like I had a connection to. And it was the first time that that's ever really happened in my life, where everybody really seemed to understand my language and the mission that I have in life, and everybody had like the same general direction and goals. Did you get that same impression when you came?
I did. I finally felt like everybody was listening to what I said and totally agreed with, you know, the same aspect of everything. Everyone has the same idea and of what they want to do.
Yeah. And that is basically to make special education better. Mm-hmm. We have definitely seen in the last couple of years, but even prior to that, we that have been in the system have known that it needed to be improved. And it was exposed, I think, during the pandemic more so than it had been before. And that's kind of the basis of why I started this show, is because I think a lot of the problem is mindset, is that people get it into their heads a certain way that someone with a disability is going to be, whether that's in today or in the future. And this show is about showing people how that's not true. So let's get into that with your family. Tell us about you. Tell us about your little bit about your family.
Okay. So to start off with myself, I have a passion for education. I am a cosmetology teacher in the vocational high school setting. And I was a teacher prior to becoming a mom. So when I was a parent and, you know, having kids and stuff, I didn't teach anymore. And I was taking care of my kids and still doing hair, but not in the teaching aspect of it. And I have two boys and a girl. And my youngest, who has some special needs, at the age of, I believe it was 2, my kid's first preschool teacher noticed there were some things that she wanted to address before she was going to start preschool with her, and had said, I think you should have her tested. And that was my gut feeling all along. I didn't know exactly what it was. I just thought, you know, terrible twos and different things as far as behavior, communication. But a teacher that is with, you know, preschool age children, they hone in on that stuff. And she was really, really great, a little on the fence about, a little apprehensive about bringing it to our attention, because not a lot of parents react in a great way. And it wasn't the greatest feeling, but it was kind of something to solidify that's what we needed to do for her, for her benefit, you know, and stuff, and moving into her education. So we did have her tested over that summer, I believe, before preschool started. And it turned out she had severe expressive receptive language disorder. So that explained a lot of the behavior part of it. And she knew what she wanted to say, but she could not express it and in turn, reciprocate it to us. So she did start then with the private preschool and then moved into public school, which that was hard for me as a mom going from a teacher. I knew exactly she knew what to do with her, but couldn't give her all of the attention she needed. So she moved to the public school, which was great. But then, as we all know, with speech services and stuff, sometimes that does come to an end. And they do test out. And that's where I was on a mission to, there's more to my child, you know, that I feel like, as far as, yes, educationally, academically, I should say, she is very unique. And I just felt like there could have been more added to her supports that way. So it turned out, I believe she tested out in first grade, out of speech, which was exceptional. It was very, very good. But then comes the social emotional piece and more towards like gifted education. And in second grade, she did, identify as gifted. And then the pandemic hit. So we did struggle for a couple of years before the pandemic, you know, trying to fit, where does she fit in into her, in her peers, you know, in her groups of different students and that. And I, as a mom, I just felt like she wasn't getting all of the support she needed. And because she didn't really want to go to school a lot. And so that became a little bit of an issue. But during the pandemic, when she was identified as gifted, her teachers really, that was a different school year. They do have a gifted education team at her school and gave her services along with the regular homeroom via Zoom and remote learning during the whole pandemic. So that gave them like a little bit smaller group setting to interact, as well as then when they came back to school last year.
So something that I really want to hone in on about that part, about your story, is the fact that too often people think, and not that your daughter was nonverbal, but she had those difficulties expressing herself and understanding what was being said to her. But once those were able to be, I don't want to say fixed, but
I would say, supported. Yeah.
Right. Then it became very obvious that she had a lot of intelligence. And I think that is such a key point to really hone in on, because as I said, too often people think if someone can't respond to you, it's an intellectual delay. It doesn't have to do with just a speech or an expressive language delay. And I've seen that myself with kids who have been nonverbal. And once they were given the best way for them to express themselves, whether that was an iPad or a big communication device or a PEX board or whatever, they have they had a lot to say. And they knew a lot. And so I'm so glad that that was brought out in your story, because that isn't talked about enough.
Right.
So, and to go from having an IEP for speech to a gifted program, gifted program doesn't mean life is easy either.
No. And that's, as a parent, I mean, you see the reaction, you know, of people when you're just talking in regular conversation, and a lot of people will say, oh, well, that's good because, you know, now she's okay. Well, okay. Yes. Okay. All children are okay. But they also need to be supported in a way to be able to become successful and move on, you know, throughout life.
Yeah. And the social emotional part that you mentioned, from the expressive receptive delay to the gifted, because now, I mean, in my head, I kind of am a visual and I'm thinking, okay, she went from people thinking she was kind of behind.
Right.
And now she's got people who are thinking she's way ahead. And maturity wise and emotionally wise, that's a big jump.
Mm-hmm.
So how has that been handled within the school? Has it been a good thing? Has it been not addressed? Or
yes. So actually that part of it has been a really good thing. We have a really good gifted team of teachers throughout our district. And I think I'll go back a little bit, like prior to her being identified as gifted and just me trying to hone in on the extra support she needed as far as academics, so that, you know, she wasn't bored or just wanted to go to school. I think that's where it fit into, what am I trying to say? Gifted learning part of it, but removing from special education and not having any supports, you kind of like left in limbo.
Yeah.
And until she found that, you know, it started to become her. And so now she has that part of it with, you know, her smaller group of gifted students, and they can be not be themselves, but be comfortable within that smaller setting, because they do have a little bit where they can become distracted in a bigger group setting in a classroom. So it's nice to have that time to be with a smaller group and their teacher that can hone in on their skills.
Yeah, that's awesome. I often hear about gifted programs, and it doesn't sound like this is the case with yours, that it's just, well, we'll give them extra work.
Right.
And so what sort of supports, what sort of things are happening for your daughter or have happened? I mean, I know we're in summertime now. So what sort of things have been like the most helpful, the most encouraging, the most supportive for her?
I would say that time with her gifted teacher, they pull out from her homeroom class. I believe it's 3, sometimes 4 times a week for like a specific time block during like their reading. So they get to do like different activities with their smaller group. And too, each individual child gets to express and be encouraged. And they have actually formed friendships within each other, I think, because it gives them that time to be away from all of the distractions that sometimes comes along with a bigger homeroom class. Not that they don't learn in that setting, but it gives them a break as far as the social emotional piece that sometimes when kids have different needs, they also have that sensory, you know, need to have breaks and stuff included in that.
Yeah. You know, I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, I don't actually know, because none of the schools where I have worked had an actual gifted program. Mm-hmm. And they also had, I have not known anyone, like, what are the criteria? What was the determining factors that your daughter's school said, yeah, she needs to go into the gifted program?
She had actually had a neuropsychological exam prior to a COGAT testing. And so they kind of factor in that COGAT testing, and then there's NWEA MAP testing, kind of all put all of those things together, data points, but it's mostly that COGAT testing to see where they fall. And she, from what was done in second grade, it was middle of second grade, she tests in the top 3%. Of okay. students for that test. So there are different variations where our school district as a whole really takes in consideration the kids are like that are on the cusp of, you know, in between that and could use enrichment services. So they do a lot of, you know, shifting the students to, we're giving them all what they need, but then hone in on just the gifted students too.
Okay, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So we said at the beginning that we are both master IEP coaches. So what led you from being a teacher of cosmetology to a parent of three children to being a master IEP coach?
I just felt after my daughter tested out, and that was, of course, because of data and, you know, the testing and stuff like that, I just felt like there was more to it for her specifically. So initially, I went into becoming a master IEP coach for my daughter and for her educational needs, which in turn, you know, talking with friends and acquaintances became, can you help me with this? And can you help me, give me a little guidance on this? Or how does this email sound, or this letter? Or what is, you know, all of these different questions. So once I became a master IEP coach, that wasn't my intention. It was mostly for my family, but it has now helped other families too. And, but that basically, I would say her going off of the IEP led me to becoming more of an educational advocate, because I felt like there was more to it. And not in a bad way, but just to help support her and other kids.
And so since becoming a master IEP coach, did you find that your gut feeling was correct, that there was more that maybe could be, or could have even been done for your daughter?
Yes, I do.
Can you talk about that or no?
I do feel like that as far as like, because there's more when you come to, twice exceptional students, mm-hmm. And honing in on giftedness as well as a disability. I felt like at the time, it was basically labeled as kids are kids, you know, certain things at their ages when they're kindergarten, preschool. Mm-hmm. But as a parent, I felt like there was more that could have been done.
Yeah. And I think that mom instinct, that parent instinct, mm-hmm. I you know, you always hear about mom's instinct, but dads have it too.
Right.
You know, so I don't want to exclude them. I think it's important that if you feel in your gut that something else could be done, that you reach out to your school first, you know, and you talk with the staff and you tell them how you're feeling and you just, you know, try to work with them that way. And then if you still don't feel like things are settled, if your gut is still telling you, no, there's something else. And it isn't, as Nicole said, it's not that the school is trying to do anything wrong or that they're intentionally avoiding doing things. A lot of times they themselves don't understand what else could be done. And I'm finding this the more clients that I work with, especially the more teachers that I work with across the country, that our parents are our best resources as educators. But oftentimes we are, I think, afraid to ask the parents for support or help because we're supposed to be the expert as the teacher. And if we're asking questions, then that might lower the person's thinking about us and, you know, might look like we really shouldn't be teaching because we don't know.
That perception. But
yeah, there's no way to know everything. I mean, because truly every person is an individual.
Right.
That's why the two first letters of the law and the document are individual or individualized, Individuals mm-hmm. with Disabilities Education Act and IEP, Individualized Education Program. We can't know how everything affects every single student that walks into our room just based on our own knowledge.
Right.
And so did you find any kind of pushback from teachers? Or on the flip side, did you find teachers who were very receptive to getting knowledge from you and getting support from you?
I feel like I have teachers that work with her that are very receptive to what I have, you know, try to explain about her. And now that they've gotten to know her, I feel like I don't have to explain that anymore right at the moment. Because with the gifted program that we have, the gifted teacher in her building moves up each grade level with her. So she has that support along with, you know, the gifted teacher explaining to the new teacher each year, mm-hmm. and kind of those two working together, which is really, really helpful, because then you feel like you don't have to, you know, it's the repeat. Oh, here comes the new school year. Like, I'm excited, but I have to, you know, get on the, you know, explaining it right away just so that there's nothing missed. And I feel like it's a really, really good system that we have there for the gifted students.
Yeah. And, you know, that's another great point that you just brought up that I want to bring out is that, you know, as a parent of a child who is neurotypical, I didn't have to think about that mm-hmm. at the beginning of a new school year. Like, oh, I need to go in and I need to explain to the teachers and to the staff how my daughter is. Mm-hmm. But whether it's, in your case, the parent of a child who is twice exceptional, or, you know, in a lot of other people's, the case of just having one disability and you know, wanting to go in. And so what sort of things, I know you said you haven't had to do it for a couple of years, but when you would have to go in and sort of prepare the new team or the new grade level people, like what sort of things did you do?
Basically, I would just email each of them and, you know, introduce myself. And when she was on the IEP, I, you know, had said, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. You know, I'm always available, that sort of thing. Or even just follow up within a couple weeks of starting school, because I know it's overwhelming. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to start off right off the bat the night before school starts. But, you know, a couple weeks or a week or so in, just to say hi and, you know, open that door of communication, like, I'm here if you have any questions or concerns and that sort of thing, and explain different things that may come up and some things may not, you know, it just all depends on the setting. Each year it's different, and just go from there.
So did you find that most teachers were receptive to that or not so much, or was it kind
most of were receptive? Most were receptive to that, which was good. And then I, you know, everyone gets busy, so sometimes there was, you know, a lag in communication, but I tried to every, at least once a month, you know, like to communicate. If not, the teacher was already in between that, you know, communicating different things too. But just try to stay on that communicative path is always a good thing.
And as a teacher, I'm going to tell a little secret.
Yeah.
Maybe most parents don't know this, but we are told when we're going through our education to get our degree, that it is best to be proactive and reach out to the families and the students before any negative comments might need to happen. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I always tried to do that. If I was getting a new group of kiddos or even a new student that I knew about, you know, I'd try to send a little thing over the summer, or if I knew the previous school year that they were going to be my student the next school year, I'd try to reach out to the student. Not necessarily the parents, and that was a downfall of mine, but I would at least try to start that relationship with the student. And I so appreciate what you do as the parent, being proactive and reaching out to the teachers before anything negative, like, oh, well, you shouldn't have done this with my child. Because to me, it truly is, you know, communication is definitely a two-way street. And if, mm-hmm. if we can start our relationships between our parents and our teachers with both of us contacting the other one first in a positive way,
right,
we're setting a much better tone for our relationship with each other. So is that something that you have thought about, and do you advise? Because I think I'm now going to advise my clients to do this. Yeah. So
Yes, I do. I do. And I just stress how much it's helped my situation to better get to know your teachers and your team, and too, if they're on an IEP, 504, any, you know, gifted services plan, I suggest to email the whole team within first couple of weeks of school, just to say hi, introduce yourself, because more than likely you're not going to have that follow-up meeting until the end of the school year. Right. So you may not have a chance to actually meet the whole team until then, and then the school year is over. So I just like to touch base and meet everybody, you know, whoever's going to be working with my child.
Yeah. And how much communication do you have with your team, with your daughter's team currently, and how much did you have at the beginning, and has it gotten better over the years, worse over the years? Did it kind of ebb and flow?
I would say it's gotten better over the years, and that's part of me being consistent with it too, because I could tell when I wasn't consistent with it, you know, it kind of falls by the wayside, but right. Being consistent with it definitely helps form those relationships with their teachers.
And again, this is so great, because I'm just loving these little nuggets that I'm able to pull out, because I find with my clients so often, and I found this with my, when I taught, that, oftentimes the parents will put all of the burden of the communication onto the teachers, because it's written in the IEP that, you know, there should be communication however often, and it needs to look like this and be in this form and whatnot. And if that didn't happen, so often parents get, you know, well, those teachers, they're not following the IEP and they're not communicating with me. And I have had clients where I've said, you know, there's nothing that says you can't reach out to the teacher. Have you reached out to the teacher before you've reached out to me?
Right.
Oh, well, no, I guess I could.
Yeah.
And again, it's that two-way street. And I'm so thankful that you said it yourself and didn't come from me as the teacher in this one, but that teachers get busy.
Right.
It's not that they are trying to avoid you. I mean, there might have, you know, there may be some situations like that. I'm not going to lie, but, you know, for the most part, they want to collaborate. They want to communicate, but they have however many students they have. And even if they only have two students, they have a million things that they're doing throughout their day for those two students. And they don't always remember, or they may even think that they've reached out. Kind of like, I thought I had sent you an email like 4 or 5 days ago about being on today. And then I looked back and I couldn't find it. And I mean, like, I pictured myself typing it out and like everything. And I don't know what happened to it. I don't know if I just really, truly dreamt that, but that happens.
Life happens, you know?
Yeah. And so to remember those kinds of things when you're the parent, you know, like, hey, you could do it too, you know? Mm-hmm. It doesn't say that the teacher will initiate the communication. I mean, I've never seen an IEP written that way.
Right,
it's
right.
That they will communicate regularly. So, okay, help them out.
Right.
You know?
And I feel like as the parent side of that, being part of that team, it's partly, you know, our responsibility to kind of keep up with that too. And that's how everybody starts to work together. I feel like from what I had experienced before, whereas I didn't feel like a complete piece of that team, and where you feel like you're just sitting there waiting for everybody to say their piece, and then that's the decision, I feel like it helps form that communication piece a little bit better, so that when it comes time for that, you have a better understanding and just feel like you can ask the questions prior to any meetings, right, or anything either.
Yeah. And so you're in Northern Illinois.
Yes.
And a couple of years ago, we had the law passed to get that draft IEP copy.
Yes.
Was your daughter still under an IEP when that passed? And so how did that help you?
Yes. And it actually, it helped a lot, in the same sense as in when we had that last, the last evaluations, and she did test out of speech. So it did help to get that prior to being right at that table, at that meeting, at that time, to kind of prepare for that. And then what my next steps were after that, you know, came after, but it did help. It did definitely help to be able to be informed and to ask those questions while we were there at the meeting.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I'm proud of Illinois doing. There's not a lot of things
right
Illinois doing when it comes to education, but I'm really happy that they passed that, because it does put, I think, everybody a little bit more even when they come into the meeting.
Right.
You know, and And I know that there are teachers out there that they don't like to do it because they feel like it's just giving the parents fodder to argue with them at the meeting. And I think if that's the case in your situation, then there's been a communication breakdown prior.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I'm happy to hear that the communication for you and your daughter's team, well, you and the rest of your daughter's team, mm-hmm. because it's, they're not a separate entity from
right.
you.
Right.
So have you felt as though you were an equal member of the team every time, or were there times when you didn't feel so equal?
There were a lot of times that I didn't feel so equal. And there were a lot of things that were addressed to help towards feeling like I was part of her education. And now I feel like I've gotten to that point because there is more fluid communication. And so that's been a big, big part of it.
Yeah. So can you share, can you remember some of the things that you did to, I mean, I know you talked about the communication part of it, but like what specifically did you do? First of all, when you didn't feel like an equal member, and, you know, to get you to the point where you do feel like you're part of her education program now.
I basically just continued with emailing and including everybody in the team, because that's where I could tell, you know, not everybody was included in on those emails. And that was where a lot of the communication breakdown was happening. Okay. So I was really, you know, more pushing towards everybody being on the same page because we're talking about the same child. Right. And, you know, when we all come together to an IEP meeting, you want to make sure that everybody knows what was being said and, you know, try to agree upon or just talk about before and prior to those meetings. So it was a good thing to include everyone in on those messages and communication back and forth.
That's awesome. Have you had any pushback from anybody about the number of emails that you've ever sent? Like, this is way too many, stop emailing us every, you know, every month or every
no,
month or whatever.
No. Uh-uh. And I tried not to, you know, do too many because I don't want to be bombarded like that either, but,
right.
But it is good to just check in every, you know, if you feel like there's not really much going on, maybe once a month or so, just to say, hey, you know, how's everything going, you know, and
right.
certain things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And excuse me, I'm having all kinds of issues today. yeah. I mean, I've had parents who go to the extreme and they will email daily, you know, what happened today, and they will email the whole team. And then it starts this whole long spiraling thread of, you know, back and forth. And there has to be, I think, some parameters mm-hmm. when you have some communication like that, when you are emailing the whole team, in order to keep that relationship in a positive light.
Right.
And so that's definitely, and that's a struggle for parents. I understand, because you want to know what's going on with your child, especially, and I find this with my parents whose children are more nonverbal. Mm-hmm. You know, that they need that daily communication.
Right.
And it's truly a need, because their child isn't coming home and sharing part of their day with them like a verbal child would. And I understand, and I get this argument a lot, well, my verbal child doesn't come home and tell me, and I can ask them questions and they, you know, they'll give me a one or two word answer, but it's a different level. Like, you know, I could continue to question my daughter and get more information out of her.
Mm-hmm. And I do agree. I do fully agree with that, because back when I felt like there was not a lot of communication, she was not able to communicate. And, mm-hmm. And now since it is different, but I can relate to that, and the feeling, you know, of a parent feeling like you're not being heard, or, you know, like they're not communicating with you. So that has since changed, but it definitely makes a big difference.
Yeah. And for your daughter too, when that was going on in her life, she was, you said, pre-K age and mm-hmm. kindergarten age. And what we have to realize, I think, as parents, I mean, not as parents, as teachers, and what we need to keep at the forefront of our mind, especially with the developmental ages of our children, whether they are a chronological age and their developmental age is younger, or they are their developmental and their chronological age are younger, is that, you know, it's always, no matter the age, that we are giving, you as our, as the parents are giving us your most prized world. I don't want to call them a possession, but you know what I'm saying? And you're trusting us as educators to do what's right for your child and to take care of your child to a certain level. I mean, no teacher is going to take care of a child as well as the parent. But we have to remember to give that communication and not be offended when you ask. Did you get that sense that sometimes when you were asking for that communication, that some of your teachers felt offended that you would ask?
A little bit, I think, at first, until, you know, we got to know each other, mm-hmm. and they understood her disability, and then it became more clear.
Yeah.
So then
that's good.
It was a relief then, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I know I always told the parents that I worked with, and I even came across an email from early on in my teaching career from a parent that I was responding to. And I said, thank you for reminding me that I said I would do this. And as I remember telling you at the meeting, I told you I would do this, but that I would need to be reminded because I knew I would forget, because there were so many things, especially new teachers. You know, you're trying to figure everything out, and then you have this parent who wants this daily communication or weekly, or, you know, they just want to know this bit of information, and it is difficult. But when a parent reaches out and says, hey, what's happening, whether or not it's been in the IEP that way or discussed at the IEP meeting, we have to do better as teachers to not be offended, because we do have to remember that we have this person's most prized whole world, part of their life, in our hands,
right?
For those however many hours a day. So who our mentor Catherine always talks about, our ideal client. Yes. So I'm going to pop up your website, and I'm going to pop up the website address here, and then pop up your actual website. So tell us a little bit about your website, who you serve, how people can reach out to you, all of that fun information.
With mostly my expertise being in speech and language disorders, and also the gifted spectrum, I mainly specialize in communication with your team, whether it be IEP team, 504, gifted services. My ideal client is if you feel like you're not being heard between, you know, communications between emails or phone conversations, to try to get you on that level so that everyone's communicating and can be collaborative towards your child and their future.
And I really love this. There is no greater relief for a parent than that of being heard when it comes to advocating for your child. That is so often resonated to me by the parents that I work with. And that's, I think that speaks to everything that we've been speaking to today.
Yes. And I do feel like going through the mentorship and going back through some of her IEPs as far as the parent input statement on my end was very vague because I didn't know very much about it. So that is another piece that I help parents create for their children. And it's not like that will help or not help, that will happen within those, you know, so many months of that school year, but that's the goal. You know, that's right. The goal of where you see your child and just different aspects of it. So that's my main objective, is to help parents be able to further communicate with their team, and that in turn helps their child self-advocate for themselves as they get older.
Right. So is there anything specific that you want me to share from your website? Otherwise, I'm going to stop sharing your website.
No, I mean, that was pretty much it.
Okay. So one of the things that I noticed on your website was you talked about 504 coaching. So, you know, most of the time when I talk to people, it is about IEPs. Can you give sort of the difference between an IEP and a 504, and who might want, not want, nobody wants either of these things, who might need an IEP versus who might need a 504?
It all depends on the disability of the student. And because I work with a lot of twice exceptional students, that's where they have been, you know, shifted, we'll say, to a 504 plan, mm-hmm. and somewhat gifted services. So that kind of ties in together both as a whole. So it helps further the communication with the team.
Okay. So one of the things that I understand about the differences is basically two, that like a 504 is more accommodations and modifications and maybe some related services, and the IEP is those things plus specially designed instruction.
Right.
Is that sort of a good
definition? Decipher of, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. A good way to, yeah, tell the difference between the two. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because like I said, I mostly deal with IEPs, but I do have the occasional 504. And I think most of the people that have been on the show are more familiar with the IEP than
with
the
IEP purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where I find more of the gifted students have either they're on the gifted placement plan or they have a 504 along with gifted. Not a lot have IEPs along with gifted. It just comes with the territory, but there can be. So it's a mix of all three, you know, it could be a mix of either or.
Right. Yeah. And typically, if you have an IEP, you don't also have a 504.
No. Okay. No, usually if you have an IEP, you only have an IEP.
Right.
Or vice versa. Or switch to, you know, one or the other. But yeah, you don't have both. At least in Illinois, you don't have both.
Yeah, I had someone reach out to me recently, and they're in Illinois, and their child is getting both. They have a 504 for medical reasons, and they were getting a speech only IEP.
I see.
And they were like, should I just combine everything into the IEP? And I actually advised them to keep them separate because what we talked about before, so often kids will graduate out of having a speech only IEP. And I was afraid that it, you know, be like, oh, well, we're just going to be done with everything. But if they had the two separated things, then they could still keep
that
their
makes
medical,
sense. Yeah,
you know.
Because that can happen.
Yeah. And again, it isn't that I thought the school would do it intentionally. It'd be like, oh, hey, your child doesn't need the IEP anymore. That's true. You know, it all goes away. And then the child is left without those accommodations. Or you'd go through a whole nother process to get them all again. So, yeah. So good. I'm glad that you think that was an okay recommendation. Because
yes,
that's, like I said, the 504s, I work with them, but those aren't so much into my area. Okay. So, Nicole, this is the time where I ask, is there anything that you want to say? First of all, before I ask that, this artwork behind you,
yes,
with the ribbon on it, can you tell me about that?
So that, which way am I going? This way.
That way, yeah.
So yes, I always, or lately, I've liked to showcase this piece of artwork that Isabel has done. She is an artist through and through since she could pick up the pencil. So she has always been passionate about art, but she's also been doing hypnotherapy the last probably about 4 years outside of school, obviously. And so she's on their horse show team. And one time when we came home from her horse show, she got out her, you know, paints and drew up just with a pencil, sketched it out and drew it. And that's a portrait of herself with her horse.
Oh,
and that she won the ribbons.
That is so cool.
So that's another piece too that I like to kind of add in. This past school year, I became part of our school district's gifted curriculum review board. And so they're in the process. It might be a couple of years till they solidify it, but mainly just to add to it if it needs to be changed from what it is. And to focus in on talents along with their giftedness to help further their they're being intrigued in school and, you know, furthering their education. And so that's a piece that I like to share with her teachers too, when we talk, that she absolutely loves art. And that is like her go-to storytelling piece about her life. So if she can't express it by talking because she is shy, she expresses it in her artwork.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's so cool. That's so cool. Yeah, hippotherapy is fantastic. I worked for or volunteered for a therapeutic writing center for 3 years in my area, and was on their board of directors. And it's incredible, the advances that the children make that are in the therapy, and even veterans. I mean, really anybody, you know.
Right. A lot of people can benefit from it.
Yeah. Physical therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy. Yeah. Behavior therapy. You can do it all.
Yeah.
When you're doing hippotherapy. So that's fantastic. So, okay. So now let me get back to this. This is the time where, you know, I want to make sure that you have had opportunity to share what you wanted to share, to tell your story the way you wanted it told. Did you miss anything? Is there anything you want to elaborate on?
I don't think we missed any, as far as, you know, me telling all about my story, that I missed anything, but coming from a parent perspective, always go with your gut is what I say. And, you know, bring that across to teachers, your team, the therapist, your children sees, just to say, you know, do they see the same things, that kind of thing, just to stay on the same page, and to always advocate for your child, because you are their voice. And especially when they're little, you know, and it just carries them through. There's a lot of times where I, you know, should I have said that, you know, or not? And yes, because that is a part of her. And hopefully she'll thank me one day. I know she will. But but yeah, it's just, I have it in me as a teacher perspective too, and a parent now. And I just, that communication is key.
Yeah. It really, truly is. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how important that was until I wrote my book, because I thought, after knowing so many families and working with so many families for so many years, that I had a decent understanding. Mm-hmm. And then I interviewed the people, the families for my book, and went, oh my goodness, you know, I didn't realize. And the whole communication thing and the trust piece, that actually came to me in one of my own situations before writing the book, where I had a student that was the same age as my daughter, and we invited the student to an event in our, the buddy walk in our area. And when the dad was putting his daughter into our vehicle, he said, "You realize you are the first person that we have ever let her go with."
Wow.
And I said, "Oh, you mean outside of family?" He says, "No, ever.
Ever.
Ever." And I mean, the weight that I thought, oh, I truly am taking your whole world right now. Mm-hmm. And it still overwhelms me today when I think about the amount of trust that they had in me. Mm-hmm. And I, and my husband, whom they had never met. Mm-hmm. And he was driving, and I just, communication, you know, I had built that relationship with them. And they trusted me, and they knew they could trust me. They knew that I had their daughter's best interests at heart.
That's wonderful.
And it's as you can tell, it still gets me. And it's been, 15, 16 years since that happened. It's incredible what communication can really do. So, Nicole, thank you for joining me today.
I
so much enjoyed getting to know you a little bit better. Had no idea that you were a cosmetology teacher. That's awesome. I appreciate you. I appreciate all that you're doing. To my audience, make sure, if you need help specifically in the areas of communicating with the rest of your child's IEP team, the speech language piece of it, maybe even the 504, if that's where you're going. Sounds like Nicole is a great resource for all of those things. Her website is still up on the screen. So make sure you reach out to her. And next week will be episode 96. I'm creeping up to 100. I'm very excited. Next week with Angel McGee. So I hope you'll all tune in. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
Thank you, Shelley.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.